Welcome back to Rosa Ball's NBA Betting. I had a little epiphany. I've been doing a lot more daily fantasy DFS than actual sports betting. I like DFS. I think it's really cool. You're you know, betting on, you're not really betting. You're creating a bunch of lineups, and you kind of have a portfolio of players you're choosing that night based on matchups, based on what Vegas say. So my inaugural DFS episode, and I've been playing DFS for years, mainly playing FanDuel. I like it a lot better than DraftKings. I'll explain that. I want to talk about sort of tenements, tips, and tricks to NBA DFS. So, a couple rules. First off, in general, there's a rule. There's the lottery players. This applies to both sports betting, really investing in general, and DFS. There are lottery wins, and there are just like tactical ways to slowly grow your bankroll. Just like any investing, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. And a lottery play could be fun, but it's just that. If you're looking to, you know, have a moment of feeling like, oh, do I have a chance at X amount of money, crazy prize pool for a couple of lineups, sounds great, but it's unlikely, right? You're not going to be able to turn $2 into $1 million. Like, that's not the purpose of this. This is the purpose to slowly grow a bankroll, right? And by the way, sports betting is the same way. Like, I always tell people when they bet on, you know, things like parlays, and the odds are already +5, +8, you know, it's a lottery play at that point. The people that win money, having worked at a sports betting company, the people that win, you see a team that's -200, that really should be, you know, -250 or -300, right? If you make those bets and you win 10, 20%, 30% returns over time, that's obviously, you're doing that on a daily basis. That's quite an amazing play. So you don't want to do crazy, but I'll focus more on DFS than sports betting with that notion, right? So first thing is, like, know that going in with the lineup. So a lot of the math I do, I'll talk about player entry, I'll talk about tournament entries, right? So I think the first thing you got to look at is, when you're even looking at a tournament, you should divide, I always look at to divide the number of lineups I'll have in the tournament divided by the total entries. So in general, let's use FanDuel as an example. Usually on their main slate for their 7 p.m. one, when it's the prize pool is like 30, 40K up to 100K, you typically have more than 20,000 entries, and the most lineups you can put in is 150. So your percentage is going to be under 1%. It's like almost like a 0.5%, 0.7%. That's not great. So meaning, even if I maxed out the entries, I put in 150 lineups, which is the max you could do, you're only at 0.7%, right? The number I like to be at is about, I like to be at least 1 to 2% of total entries. So right off the bat, there's just not, there's going to be too many quirks in there. You know, look, again, it's a fun play sometimes. I get it. There's like a lottery component. But that's one concern, right? So sometimes I like to even just avoid if there's just that many entries, right? Now, is there shadiness going on? I'm sure there are with the players where they combine entries and they get that number between a couple of players above 1%, which then makes it worthwhile if you have like 450, 600 lineups in one entry. You can't do that as one user, and I don't suggest doing that because that's illegal, right? If you're playing with one person, you're yourself, 150 lineups, you're maxing out, you want the total entries to be under 15,000. So you're above 1%. Just the math works out better. The lower the better, right? So if the total entries is under 10,000, now you're above 1%. That's really good. So like, the max entries are 150, prize pool is like 20 grand, entries are like $9. That to me is a good ratio, where you're getting like 1 to 2% of the total entries and doing that. Which brings me to the second point that should probably be my first point. Any entries you're playing on Daily Fantasy, I know I'm going to get a lot of pushback on this, but I'm a believer on this. You need to max out your entries. You have to max it out. So if the max to enter is 150 lineups, you got to put in 150 lineups. It's 21, you got to put in 21. If you can't max it out, do not play it. Okay, if you're just starting out and you want to do a smaller tournament, you can do this. I know DraftKings, which again, I'm not as in favor of, has the jukebox stuff for nickel, 25 cents, 10 cents, what have you. FanDuel for novices have under $3. They also have the $3 main slate. Again, that's going to be more of a lottery play. I think it's usually like a $3 entry. First place is 10 grand. So if you max out 150 lineups, it's $450. But again, those usually don't make sense given there's usually like 25 to 30,000 entries in totality. So you're under that a 0.5%, 1% of total entries threshold, which you don't want to be, right? So again, just on the math, if you're putting 150 lineups, you need to have under 15,000 total entries. It's not an exact thing, obviously, but like you need to look at the total entries. If it's, you know, the football stuff, I'm not going to get into football. They're like at 49, 50,000 entries in totality. Crazy. The way people win that, honestly, over time, is they have, as I talked about earlier, a group of people, they're doing something illegal, and they're combining entries together in a larger pool to get the number of total entries, of their entries divided by the total number of entries at the tournament above 1, 2, 3%, whatever it might be. Fine. So first, pick that right. You want to look at the entries. You want to look at how much can I afford, obviously. So for me, I have to max out 150 lineups. And I'm only looking at total entries that are above that 1%. So, you know, usually under 15,000. Okay, great. The next thing is you have to pick a time and schedule where you're going to be readily available to make all the edits, all the lineup changes. I know it sounds silly, but it's extremely important. The NBA has a crazy amount of late scratches. There's always late adjustments, late data that comes in, rotational changes, what have you. The people that make those changes have an edge. The people that don't, do not, right? Look, obviously luck's involved in all this, but there's always late scratches. And like the domino impact is everything. From minor to major, right? So for example, if Atlanta is playing and you realize maybe not a top-end starter, doesn't have to be out. So let's say like, okay, great, like Murray and Young are playing. We know that, but like let's say, you know, rotational talent, Bojan Bogdanović, right, the sixth man, is out, okay? Now, clearly, there's more usage for everybody else, more touches for everybody else, right? So everybody offensively, it raises up a little bit. Obviously, the perimeter goes up a little bit more. And then you look at, okay, is there a guard, a wing talent that was, you know, normally at the back end of that rotation that moves up, right? Does Kobe Bufkin, right, who's like a rookie, start getting some minutes? DeJounte Murray probably gets more touches. Trae Young gets more touches, right? So a rotational talent missing is a dominant impact to the rest of the lineup. And then that changes then. The value of all those guys then go up, and then that rejiggers like how you look. The other thing to think about, so saying that, right, if you're playing a 7 p.m. slate and you're maxing out your lineups, you have to look at when the games start throughout the night, and am I going to be available like at least 5 to 10 minutes to be safe before every tip-off, right? So, for example, if there's a 7 o'clock slate and their games are at 7:30, 8, 9, and 10, you need to be available at 7:20 to 7:30, 7:50 to 8, right? 8:20 to 8:30, let's say, whatever it starts. 10 minutes before each tip-off time, you need to be available because there's going to be late slates, I mean, late changes, late scratches, all that, right? But now you might say, well, wait, hold on a second. How am I pumping out 150 lineups to take advantage of all these late changes? So I want to talk about tools that you use to enhance your lineups. I'm not getting paid by any of these guys. I'll just tell you the tools I use. I think they're great tools. There's two main tools. You have Stochastic. It used to be Osmo. It's a great projection tool. It has two cool things. It has the daily fantasy projections, and it has what I call boom-bust probability. Those two things I look at constantly, and obviously you want to gauge ownership as well, right? Now, here's the truth. Use that tool. And then the other tool you use is Fantasy Cruncher. you could get a combined subscription through Stochastic where it's all in one, so you could get the projections with Fantasy Cruncher. That's fine. And then the tools are automatically uploaded to Fantasy Cruncher. I suggest doing that. Makes it a lot easier. Great. So here's essentially what you do. So you're playing a 7 o'clock slate. This is typically the process. You open up Fantasy Cruncher. You get the subscription that the Stochastic... You can look at the prices. I don't know what they are right now. You can look it up online. You can look at it up where the Stochastic projections are automatically uploaded. It's a Fantasy Cruncher. So I look at my... I go to FanDuel on Fantasy Cruncher. I do my slate. Pick up any lineups I want. And then the next thing I do is I'll use... I'll do a couple things. So the first thing I'll do is I'll actually go to advanced options. And I'll look at the over-under for games and the spread, okay? And typically, no matter if there's more, it depends on the number of games in the slate, but like typically the way I like to do it is if there's four or more games, I'll make my baseline number for each, the max amount of players I'll choose per team as two. So I'm not taking more than two players per team. That's my average, okay? Then I look at the over-unders. And to me, the average NBA over-under, I've noticed, this is not even like an exact thing, it's typically like high 220s, so like 228, 230 range. Okay, so not exact math thing, I get it, but if my average is two in a given night, so there's four or more games, I'll pick a two, and any over-under where it's higher than 230, it's like 230 to 240, for those games, I'm putting three max players per team. If it's under like 220, so it's like 218, even low 220s, I'll put in one. Okay? Because it makes sense. So if Vegas is saying basically that the total number of points for that game will be under or severely under the average of total number of points that is normally scored in an NBA game, I want to take less players from each team. Okay? And then the opposite is true. There's more points, I want to take more players. Great. Then if it's a blowout or like a high spread, I'll do one less from one of the teams. So for example, you know, San Antonio was in Boston, okay? Let's say it was, you know, Boston favored by 14.5 for making it up, right? And the over-under was like 231.5, right? So normally that would be kind of a two for each, but I'll probably do two for Boston and one for San Antonio because San Antonio is projected to score way less. Thus, you know, less opportunities and all that. So you're basically relying that Vegas is going to be right. I'm not saying Vegas is always right, but over time they typically are. That's why they are the bookmakers. You're assuming Vegas is always going to be right. And and that would that logic, you know, holds true over time, right? So now I use the tool, I have projections in through Stochastic, great, and I have the max players I'm taking per team. Okay, great. Now, I'm not done yet. I gotta pick my player pool. So again, rule of thumb I like to use, you don't have to use it, and it's a rough number. So I use the boom bust. So I have the projections in, as I told you, and I'm gonna use boom bust to get my player pool. And typically, I wanna have only, again, give or take 20-ish percent of the total player pool, the total players that are playing that night in my what's called my player pool. I'll talk about player pool is basically going to be who your portfolio of players are going to be for those night's lineups, right? So those are going to be the players are going to be in pretty much all your lineups, right? Now, is it 20? Is it 25%? It depends on the boom bust. So I'll go to boom bust. And I'll actually do position by position, because remember, the way players are selected in Daily Fantasy is by position, right? So I tend to try to manage my total pool based on the number of players per position. So said differently, it depends on the night, but said differently, if there's 160 players playing that night, I'm going to want, let's say, 40 players, okay? If I have 40 players, I'm going to typically a roughly around eight players per position. Okay, that doesn't mean I have to be exact with this, okay? Some positions could have as low as 6, some could have as high as 10. I don't want to really deviate so much between 10 and 6, though. Like, I don't want to go less than 6 for a position or more than 10, because if I do that, then I'm really thinning out the percentage of allocation to any player, any one player in that pool, right? Because remember, to win daily fantasy, you have to have the right combination of players within your lineup. Okay, so I'll use the boom bust tool with Stochastic. So I have to go to Stochastic itself. You can't find it through Fantasy Cruncher itself. You have to go to Stochastic. And I'll go each position, and I'll sort by the boom potential, right? So which guys are likely to break out, basically, is what the boom bust potential tells you. It tells you which guys are likely to break out, which guys have the likelihood to bust, if you will. And it basically equates that with, like, ceiling potential. So I want to take basically the top 8 guys per position that have the highest ceiling that night, or have the highest chance of getting more than, like, 5 times the value of the price. Okay? So I'll do that position by position, right? Try to get, let's say the top 8. But you have to, like, kind of eyeball it. So, for example, the way it kind of works, if I'm doing point guards and I see there's clearly, like, a top 6 that are each above 10%, and the 7th guy is, like, 2%, I'm not going to go to 7. I'm going to go 6 deep at point guard. So you have to see where the boom is. If there's, like, a decent difference between, you know, 8, 6 to 7, 5 to 6 even, 7 to 8, so on and so forth, you cut it off where the difference shows, okay? And try to get between 6 and 10. The opposite's true. If I see there's, like, 8, 9 to 10, or, like, 10, 11, you know, or 10, 9, 8%, then there's a gap, I might go all the way to 10 deep, all right? In this scenario where there's 160 players, I'm choosing 40, right? Again, it's a rough estimate. But, you know, you have to eyeball. You don't want to go as, you know, maybe you go to 11, maybe occasionally. But again, you don't want to go crazy deep, so you don't want to go all the way to 14. You don't want to go crazy thin. You don't want to go all the way to 3 either. It's too risky. Too much of an allocation towards players are too thin. Fine. Now I do that. Now I have my player pool. So do that for every lineup. Now I have my player pool. And typically what you'll find is, and I know guys play multiple positions, so it's not a perfect science, but typically you're more like aggressive with centers, which you should be, because most centers, that's the only position they're playing in FanDuel. Some of them are centers / power forwards. But if that's the case, you need to be more selective there. So, like, you'll see centers have the highest boom, but you don't want to go too deep. You want to focus on those guys. Okay. So now we have our 40 player pool. We're almost done. Okay. There's a couple more steps before you, what's called crunch. Then I look through my player pool and I go, okay, I don't want to have certain players on the same team playing each other. Because again, basketball is the opposite of baseball. We're like, in baseball, if player A plays well, then player B and player C played well too, right? Because if you hit a home run with runners on first and second base, the guys on first and second base both get runs. You know, they all kind of help each other out from a fantasy perspective. Basketball, it's not the case. It's the opposite. Because if player A plays well, it means he probably took shots away from player B, right? So it depends on the slate of how strict you want to be. But I go into the advanced option setting and I go into groups. Okay. And within my groups, I go team by team within my player pool. So I say 40 players. I sort it, that group within this section by team. So now I can see all my players that's in my pool by team. And I start delineating. I create certain rules, basically, where, like, I'm taking at most one or at most two of certain groups within teams, and I'll explain. So within teams, basically, let's make it really simple. There's basically a matrix, and there's two types of players. So first, within each team, you have star players and you have role players. Make it really simple. And then you also have bigs and wings, or you can even get crazier. You got bigs, wings, and point guards, okay? So typically what I'll do is I'll use that tool, and depending on the slate, so the more games, the more aggressive I am separating the players. So I'm making rules where, like, I'll give you an example. So let's say I have New Orleans Pelicans. I have a couple players from New Orleans. The algorithm, Stochastic, is saying a bunch of players are going to boom because the Pelicans score a lot of points. They're playing in Atlanta. That game would have a high total points, right? So I might have three players from each team. But I know how the Pelicans work. And again, per the rule, it's going to be rare that, let's see, Zion and Brandon Ingram are both going to have stellar nights. Now, again, for you to win a daily fantasy, you have to have the right combo. So if you take both Zion and Ingram, you're not going to win decently. It's hard. Something crazy would have to happen. Then they could both have a crazy night again, but you're looking for what most likely happens over time. And they have to outperform their salary. So, like, while Zion can give you 21 to 10 and Ingram can give you 26 and 9 on the same night, you know, Ingram was an 8,900 salary, which means you want to have more than five times that salary. Right? So let's make it simple. Let's say it's 9,000 salary. You need to have more than 45 fantasy points. In order to have over 45 fantasy points, he needs to give you like over 30 points. He needs to give you like 35, 4 with like a steal. And that does it. So 26 isn't enough. So to Zion, Zion's usually like an 8,000. So he has to give you over 40 fantasy points. So Zion has to give you like a double-double, 25 and 10, and a couple to do that. So now you have to ask yourself, what's the odds? They both could have okay games, 20 and 10, 24, whatever, but neither one in that scenario gave you over five fantasy points. So if you're going to pick them, you basically have to pick that one of them is going to boom. One of them is going to have a ridiculously good night, or like above average night for themselves. Right? That's the only way this works. You have to separate the star talent. You don't have to necessarily do like Ingram and to me, Ingram and Zion is a classic case, but you don't have to go so strict. So if there's the more games, the more strict, because again, like in order for you to hit, you have to get like a more perfect combo with more games. So let's say there's like 10 games that night. And I have like six Pelicans. And I'll say who they are. Let's say it's Ingram, Zion, CJ McCollum, Valanciunas, and Herb Jones and Trey Murphy. Classic, right? So I might go crazy with my splitting. I might say something like, you want to do, you know, one of Ingram and Zion. And then I would probably do only two of the combo of Ingram, Zion, Valanciunas, and CJ. Because those old guys produce some scoring. I know Valanciunas rebounds, but like, if for you to win with a lineup with him, he has to score as well. So yeah, I don't necessarily need to split CJ and Valanciunas per se, because if both of them have a good night, you could still win. Right? They're not like Ingram and Zion, because the prices aren't going to be too crazy. Like those other two, but they're not crazy, but like over 8,000. CJ and Valanciunas could be under 8. That difference matters, believe it or not. Right? But I might do a thing where I say, okay, I'm going to split Ingram and Zion, and then I'll only do 2 out of 4 of those 4 guys I noted. But now I'll go back to the role players. Herb Jones and Trey Murphy. So if I have them in my lineup, they're going to be somewhat similarly priced. I might say, let me only take one of them per lineup, because it's rare that both role players, i.e. both Murphy and Ingram, are going to dominate, okay? So you do that same kind of concept with every single team. It's part of your pool. So you try to split the stars, right? You have the Knicks, let's say. It has Randall and Brunson. So again, the bigger the slate, the more aggressive, which means I'm tightening, you know, I'm not gonna do 2 out of 3 of this group, I'll do 1 out of 1. So like the Knicks are a classic example. Let's say I have Barrett, Randall, and Brunson all in my pool. So amongst my players. So if the Knicks are playing, I might, and it's like a tighter slate, there's only like there's 4 games or less, I might say, hey, only do 2 out of 3 of Randall, Brunson, and Barrett. But if it's a bigger slate and I have to thin it out, I might just say, just split Randall and Brunson. I don't want them on the same lineup. It's rare. Let me split it, right? So I'll do that. And then with the role players, it's the same difference, right? So if the Knicks are playing and have Josh Hart and Hardenstein, I'll split them. Again, rare that for you to win and you have Hart and Hardenstein, so they both have to kill it. So that's, you do that strategy throughout. So now I have my pool, right? My player pool. I have my rules with the lineups. Now I'm ready to crunch. Now again, some food for thought when you crunch. So if I have 40 players, I want to have some diversity. So you can play around with this. With advanced options, you could do a thing where like you diversify your lineups a little bit. Again, play around with it. I don't like going more than four. They have a rule where you basically could say like each lineup has to have one different player. Each lineup has to have two different players, etc. Like how many unique players per lineup. So for as a rule, once you go more than four, it's a little crazy, right? Like you're getting too many random players. I don't like going more than four. So the bigger the slate, the more diversification. Because again, in order to win, you really have to get the right combo. The tighter slate, the less diversification. So if it's a 10-game slate, again, no matter how many people are in the entries, that doesn't matter. 10-game slate, I'm going to go four advanced. I'm going to go four unique players per lineup, and I'll crunch 150 lineups, okay? And then those rules are in place. If it's like six-ish games around that area, so six, you know, four to six, I'll do three. Under four, I'll do two or less, or even three or less, two or three or less, I'm going to do one. So that diversifies it, right? Also depends on how many people are in your pool. And obviously the slates matter for that. So again, with the 160 concept, the biggest, there's 170 players-ish playing that night. I have 40 players in my pool. I'm probably going to do four unique players and spit out 150 lineups. Again, you could do three if you want. You want to get a little more aggressive. Three to four unique players per lineup, roughly that range. And then finally, I spit out my 150 lineups. And then I enter into FanDuel. And that's a classic example. Now, you know, if it's a tight lineup, if it's a tight slate, right? Let's say I'm only playing a late slate, which I highly recommend the late slates to get started because they're you got to be tighter with it. I get it. Late slates are easier. So late slates, there's only two games. I have a tighter pool. I don't have them as many players because, again, there's only like 80 players in total playing in a two-game slate. So I only have like 20 players in my pool. I probably really am not fiddling around with the advanced options so much in terms of how I'm fitting out players. I might be doing like two out of three or three out of four. Like I'm going to only want three out of four of these guys. I'm not going crazier than that. And I'm only going to do one unique player per lineup, right? So that's kind of the difference. So you have to gauge it, right? And in terms of like the lineups per game, again, I mentioned it with the two per lineup thing, two per team rather, two players per team average. With a two-game slate, you're going to do four per team because there's not that many players, but you still want to compare it. So, like, you want to compare the games with each other. So, for example, there's two games, and one totals is 220, and one totals is 240. I'm probably going to do four for each from the 240 and three for each for the 220, okay? So, again, you have to kind of gauge how many players you're picking per team based on the total average. The final thing I'll say, and then I'll shut up, is this isn't like you have to have some kind of gut feel and watch NBA as well, right? So like stochastic, I like it a lot, the projections are good, they're a little slow, okay? So like it takes them like, they're not as, they take like too long sometimes to notice like a trend for a player, like it's like multiple games, and sometimes if you watch the games, you can kind of see like how the teams are playing a guy. So classic examples recently, you know, Ayo Dosunmu, right, on Chicago, Ayo. So he wasn't starting, but they were trying him as a sixth man. Chicago's running a tight rotation, so he's still getting over 30 minutes. They knocked him a little too much for that. He was still like a 5,000 kind of player, right? So that means, again, you have to get more than five times the value, so you have to want to get more than 25 fantasy points. If he's playing 30 minutes, he does a lot of deflections. He's sort of like a five, he's a full, he's the rotisserie-style fantasy basketball talent, I would say, because he gives you a little bit of everything. So they were a little slow in their projections to show the boom. So I ranked them up, right? Again, like, if you rely only on the stochastic things, it's not always great. You got to watch a little bit as well. But it's still a great foundation to start. And then the late scratches. Let's talk about the late scratches. So the reason why that's important to check on your lineups is you could change your projections throughout the night. So, for example, game starts at, you know, 7 o'clock. The next game started at 8. And there's a bunch of news before the 8 o'clock games. I could go to FanDuel. I could do the CSV edit. I could, you know, download my live lineups before the 8 o'clock slate. Go back to the Fantasy Quartet tool, now refresh it. Now they've luckily uploaded or changed a bunch of the data, and now have refreshed projections based on some late news. And I can do what's called late swaptimizer. So I can take the CSV edit, click on late swaptimizer, and then it will recrunch my lineups. And I'll usually have this warning sign that says, like, they can't recrunch it because, you know, either players, you know, you've already played everyone on that slate, they're already live, or the math doesn't work out where they're going to change that lineup. But then I can make a couple of adjustments depending on what the data says, right? And then take that crunched lineup and then load that right into FanDuel. And I have a refreshed lineup that takes into account updated projections. So if you do that throughout the night, you get an edge. Last night, as an example, I'm taping this December 28th, you had, like, Ja Morant was a late scratch. That's a huge thing. So obviously, you know, that impacts the whole Grizzlies game. Anthony Simons on the Portland Trailblazers was a late scratch. So obviously, Brogdon and Scoot look a lot better, et cetera, et cetera. So these late scratches make a huge difference. And if you do that and other players don't, that's an edge. I'll try to give you more picks throughout the year, here and there when I can. But for now, that is a daily fantasy rundown and daily fantasy do's and don'ts.